By Namacharya Shira. Previous. Kaschit. Someone. Sakha. Friend. Brahmanaha. A Brahmana. Atmavan. Very learned scholar. Sanfayan. Pacifying. Valguna. By very nice. Samna. Mitigating words. Tam. Unto her. Aha. He said. Rudatim. While she was crying. Prabhu. My dear king. So translation. My dear king, one Brahmana, who was an old friend of King Puranjana, came to that place and began to pacify the queen with sweet words. You can repeat, my dear king. One Brahmana, who was an old friend of King Puranjana,
came to that place
and began to pacify the queen
with sweet words.
So, purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāi. The appearance of an old friend in the form of a Brahmana is very significant. In His Paramātmā feature, Krishna is the old friend of everyone, according to Vedic injunctions. Krishna is sitting with the living entity side by side. According to the Shruti mantra, Vāsuparna sayuja sakāyaha. The Lord is sitting within the heart of every living entity as surat, the best friend. The Lord is always eager to have the living entity come home back to Godhead. Sitting with the living entity as witness, the Lord gives him all chances to enjoy himself materially. But whenever there is an opportunity, the Lord gives good counsel and advises the living entity to abandon trying to become happy through material adjustment and instead turn his face toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto Him. When one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution is tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As explained before, this verse, this means meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the instruction of the spiritual master. This is technically called Vani Seva. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states in his Bhagavad Gita commentary on the verse, Vyavasayatmika Purir Ekeha Kuru Nandana. This is from the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, text 41. That one should serve the words of the spiritual master, the disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders. Simply by following on that line, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, appeared before the queen as a Brahmana. But why didn't he appear in his original form as Shri Krishna? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that unless one is very highly elevated in loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot see Him as He is. Nonetheless, if one sticks to the principles enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other, he is in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Lord is in the heart, He can advise a sincere disciple from within. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, text 10, Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tatami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapuhu. This is the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification,
If one instead sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. Srila Bilva Mangala Thakura has therefore said, Bhakti Stvai Stira Tara Bhagavan Yadi Shad Daivena Na Palati Divya Kishori Murti Mukti Swayam Mukuti Amukul Mikulitanjali Sevate Smin Dharamartha Kama Gataya Samaya Patikshaha. If I am engaged in devotional service unto you, my dear Lord, then very easily can I perceive your presence everywhere. And as far as liberation is concerned, I think that liberation stands at my door with folded hands waiting to serve me. And all material conveniences of dharma, religiosity, art, the economic development, and kama, sense gratification, stand with her. This is from the Krishna Karnamrita, text 107. If one is very highly advanced in devotional service, he will have no difficulty in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one engages in the service of the spiritual master, he not only sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but attains liberation. As far as material conveniences are concerned, they automatically come, just as the maidservants of a queen follow the queen wherever she goes. Liberation is no problem for the pure devotee, and all material conveniences are simply awaiting him at all stages of life. So, tatra purvatarha kaschit saka brahmana hatmavan santvayan vaguna samdha tamaha rudatim prabho. So, omagana timadandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshurun meditam Yena Tosmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So this is another verse that was read quite often, and we had many classes on this verse when His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, passed away from this world. This is another verse we've heard many, many, many times. So when Srila Prabhupada passed away in 1977, I was in Los Angeles. Where were you, Apurva? In 76? Oh, you were in New York. New York Temple. I was in the Los Angeles Temple, and I was working with the Spanish BBT, helping Srila Prabhupada's mission in South America. And it's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada had given the directions before he passed away that he wanted all of his disciples with him. And some of the leaders of the society were, let's say, maybe a little too intelligent for their own good. They told the devotees, I was ready to go to India immediately, that Prabhupada only wanted to see those devotees whom he knew. And that's a little painful, isn't it? You know, so it's like, you know, Prabhupada knows you, Prabhupada doesn't know me, you know, it's just like, you know, the eternal spiritual master. Of course, I mean, sometimes when a devotee would go with Prabhupada and Prabhupada would ask the temple president or whoever, you know, what is this devotee's name? So that's just an external thing, but Prabhupada actually knew everybody. He was, even though it appeared sometimes that he, let's say, didn't remember your name like that, but he knew everybody. It's not that. That's a mundane conception that someone has to remember your name. But there's something else going on at a deeper level. And all of us experienced different types of interactions with Prabhupada when Prabhupada was physically present in this world. I mean, there's so many stories devotees would tell how Prabhupada would look at one and would appear like Prabhupada was looking right through you. And he knew all the different... And art is in your heart, you know, just like that. You know, hear all these stories, like, and it is a fact, like, Prabhupada understood the heart of his disciples. So when we heard this, that, you know, Prabhupada only wanted to see the devotees who he knew, you know, in other words, he would only be encouraged by certain personalities and other personalities, you know, just why waste your time? But Prabhupada, why waste Prabhupada's time? But that was very painful, of course.
The Prabhupada even was in favor of shutting down, at least temporarily, all the temples so the devotees would be with him, you know, because it was presented by one of the GBC people that if everybody goes to see you, then things will stop. And so Prabhupada said, let it stop. Because Prabhupada understood that it was very important to give those that final association, final instructions before he left the planet. And Prabhupada knew he was going to leave the planet, so that we would remain fixed in devotional service. And, you know, final instructions are those contained right in this verse, you know, remain faithful and serve his mission. And as far as many other things Prabhupada left up to us, it's interesting. Sometimes it was portrayed to the devotees that Prabhupada appointed certain people to be gurus, but actually he didn't. He appointed certain people to represent him while he was on the planet, and Prabhupada expected us to come up with a system of you know, who would be guru, whatever, when Prabhupada left this world. And that's another subject matter that's, you know, very difficult to ascertain, because people, even today I'm getting emails from people who say, why don't you just follow the original Vedic system and not have anybody approve a guru, and let the prospective disciple decide who his guru is. In other words, just like there's no approved gurus, or there's no procedure for vetting, as they say, or screening. It's just that, you know, you can accept, if you decide he's your guru or she's your guru, that's your guru. You know, without any sort of advice from senior devotees. That's actually the tradition. In fact, if you talk about tradition, that's a tradition. There's no board of people appointed. But Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did things differently from the tradition, because their society, at least the society that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur envisioned and Prabhupada desired, going to be a worldwide society, you know, something that required professional management, strategic planning, professional, like we have now in ISKCON. We're starting to institute these things like strategic planning, professional management, and all these other things. And, some of us don't fit in so well. You know, like myself, I like more like the old style Hare Krishna movement, where you just like everything's spontaneous. You know, people start talking about professional management, I just want to head for the hills, the Govardhan Hill. So, but still, it's a necessary thing. It's a necessary thing. I mean, Prabhupada wanted something that was non-traditional, but carrying out the purpose of the tradition, which is really interesting. You know, some people are very ritualistic and they don't understand the purpose, you know, behind things. That's called teleology. And so they can't tolerate adjusting certain things. I mean, it's just like, it just freaks them out, you know, that we didn't do this when Prabhupada was present, or we didn't do that, or it doesn't say that in the Vedic, where does it say in the Vedic literatures there should be a GBC? I mean, it doesn't. I don't think it says anywhere that governing body. That's actually taken from the Indian railway system by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And the Indian railway system is the largest employer probably in the world, if not in India. There's so many trains, it's unbelievable in India. It's a lot bigger than Amtrak. I mean, there's 1.2 billion people, and most of them are taking trains. In America, we have maybe 300 million or something like that. So it's like one quarter the population, almost. You know, just about one quarter of the population. So here's a name that was taken, non-Vedic name, non-Vedic or non-Sanskrit name, whatever you call it, Vedic anyway. And so, people are stuck in that sort of thing. So as far as like the appointment of gurus, Prabhupada wanted to empower the GBC to deal with the issue. Of course, there was some misunderstanding when Prabhupada left, that Prabhupada had appointed 11 people as exclusive inheritors of his society,
And it was also another pain. There was many painful things that devotees went through. I mean, it was very painful, like when Prabhupada left, to hear and see examples of how these 11 people were actually, you know, Prabhupada's followers, and the rest of us were just supposed to be their followers. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, I mean, you can imagine, those of you who are second generation, if, you know, if everyone had to become the follower of Mahamantra or something like that. I said, you know, Mahamantra and Golokananda Priya, you know, everybody, you know, cause just because, you know, they're running the temple, therefore everyone has to put them on their altar. And to Guru Puja for Mahamantra and Golokananda Priya. I mean, we're just like, huh? What's happening here? I mean, they're nice devotees and they're serving Krishna nicely, but you know, people do have an equal right to be considered followers of their guru. But you remember this, Apurva, that it was painful that, you know, somehow or other, we're just like second rate or not, you know, not real disciples, but, you know, just a different type of disciple. Different category of disciple. You know, there's a number one disciple, number two disciple, and, you know, we're probably like the 10th class disciple. So it was actually for many reasons, it was an extremely painful time in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And in those days, of course, were called the Zonal Acharya days after Prabhupada left. So getting back to the point, so Prabhupada didn't leave specific instructions of how gurus would be chosen, or how gurus would be vetted or screened. But it's obvious there has to be some system, because you can't have just like new devotees, you know, someone in the movement 1 month or 2 months deciding who is a qualified guru without knowing, you know, whether the person knows Shastra or, I mean, at least the minimum qualification is Majjhimadhikari to be a guru. Uttama is better. But Majjhim, one who has firm faith, may not know all the Shastras, be able to defeat all the arguments, but at least he has firm faith. He remains, he's on the platform of Nishta. That's one of the qualities of a Majjhimadhikari. Nishta means he's steady. Steady 24 hours, 24-7, not 24-6. But 24-7. So that's right. So at least it has to be that. So there was a requirement that the GBC come up with system. And the system, of course, has been tweaked from time to time. I mean, if you look at how all the different changes, I mean, of course, first there were the 11 gurus, and then they tried to become a super GBC. You understand? Above the rest of the GBC people. And they, all the other GBCs were considered less important. And then the little history there. And then if anyone wanted to be a guru, no man goes to the Father but through the magic 11. So they had to go through those they had to go through those 11 to become a guru or do anything in ISKCON. I mean, the world was divided into different zones. You practically had to get a visa to go from one zone to another. Seriously. I mean, there were exclusive areas where you couldn't enter. And I mean, I remember just one time going to Texas, just to visit a friend, you know, Sankarshan Prabhu. I went to Austin, Texas, and I got a call. How have you come into Texas without permission? And the way we started New Goloka, because that was part of a GBC zone, was that I called up the person who was the GBC here. It's not important who it was. And I said, I'm just passing through. Can I stop and do a little preaching? Because I was following Prabhupada's system of, you know, you knock on the door, you put your foot in the door, and you put your body in the door. Can I sit down on your couch? You lie down on the couch, and eventually you've taken over the whole apartment. So that's Prabhupada said, that's how we preach. So I contacted the person. I'm just passing through. And so I came here, and you know, I had all intention of staying. You know, white lies, they say.
So then we started preaching, and then I got a call from the person whose owner was. It said, "How could you do this?" I said, "You gave me permission to preach here." It wasn't a time limit. And the person said, "Those persons could have been my disciples." And I said, "There was nothing going on here before. You know, there's nothing going on in this section of North Carolina." And it's specifically why I picked the place, too. Because it was a guru-free zone, GFC. Little history for you. I'm not good luck. Yeah, even though it was part of someone's guru, they even had this word, Guru Datta Desh. I don't know if you remember that. Guru Datta Desh. I mean, like Prabhu Datta Desh. It means the place given for you to be a guru. And everyone who was in that zone, regardless of who you had faith in or not, you had to take initiation from that particular individual. I mean, there's some remnants of that going on today. I mean, there's one person, a friend in a particular city, just one city, you know, that's his zone. They won't, if anyone wants to take initiation from anyone else, anyway, they're not allowed to. So, but basically, being a guru means you should be happy when someone's connected with Krishna. It's not that, you know, people think there's a sense of ownership when you're a guru, that you own your disciples. It's like you brand someone, like in the Old West, you would take the cows and you put the circle Krishna brand on them. Isn't it? Yeah. Your brand X. Anyway, so there was misunderstanding in both directions. One direction is just open up the field like anyone, initiate anyone else who wants to be initiated. And that's pretty interesting. That's the one extreme. The other extreme is that, you know, we're controlling everything and we're special. We're God's gift to Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, so there is this, you understand, there's this two opposite ends of the thing. So the point is that Prabhupada, talking about what Prabhupada wanted the GBC to have some screening process, because it's protecting innocent people from, you know, from making a mistake that'll cause them trauma. And even though we do have the screening process sometimes, you know, people who have been screened or vetted or whatever you may call it, they have spiritual trouble. I mean, it's touching. You know, there has to be some process. So anyway, so Prabhupada left a lot of things up to us when he left this world, a lot of decisions on what to do. So the point we're trying to discuss is serving the mission of the spiritual master. So another point is, when Prabhupada left this world, and of course we all read this verse many, many times, it struck me it really struck me the import of this verse, that if one becomes serious in following the mission of the spiritual master, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. So for myself, at least, this was an impetus to take sannyas. I mean, sannyas to me didn't simply represent getting all the mahaprasadam and getting everybody to bow down to you. Was that song? Bow down, mister? Yeah. Boy George song. That's not what sannyas represented to me. I mean, just like, it represented to me the dedication to ISKCON and Prabhupada's mission. I mean, that's how really I saw it. That was the impetus. That means what stimulated me, what inspired me to take sannyas. That now Prabhupada is not here. You know, things were pretty easy when Prabhupada was there. You always write to Prabhupada. And, you know, Prabhupada was coming somewhere, you could go to see him. And you'd send him a letter and you'd get some response, you know. So it indicated to me that I had to become more serious about Krishna consciousness. Not that I wasn't serious before, but more serious, just completely focused and dedicated like Vyavasaya, the verse that Srila Prabhupada states here, the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes, which is Vyavasayatmika Bhutira Ekeha Kudanandana, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, those who are on this path are one pointed and their determination is one. And those who are not on the path, Bahushakashtvanantascha. In the minds of those who are irresolute, their determination is many branched. This is what the Bhagavad Gita says. So just hearing that, remembering Prabhupada's instructions, then I decided that I had to take sannyas, which was complete dedication without any personal interest. I mean, that's what sannyas represents. I can't say I don't have any personal interest. I mean, I have to be honest. But at least I'm trying to be focused in that particular way. So that was an impetus to serve Srila Prabhupada and remain faithful to his society. So to carry out the mission of Srila Prabhupada requires a lot of intelligence. Like Prabhupada, this is famous quote, Prabhupada was talking to Giriraj Maharaj. I don't know if any of you heard this quote. And Prabhupada asked Giriraj Maharaj, will the movement go on? Will the movement go on when I leave? Anyone heard this quote before? Some of you. And Giriraj Maharaj said, if we're sincere. And of course, that's true, too. But then Prabhupada responded, you know, like something like intelligence, good management has to be. So it's not that one follows in a blind fashion the spiritual master. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita itself, Srila Prabhupada says blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. So it takes a lot of brain power to actually serve the mission of the spiritual master. Because if one simply follows blindly, one may act in a way that's a disservice to the spiritual master. Some blind followers, they criticize those who are actually attempting their best to spread Krishna consciousness. For example, you have my godbrother Devamrita Maharaj, who's doing this like loft preaching. And the loft preaching, you know, they teach yoga and they don't have a standard, you know, Hare Krishna program going on. So people may say, where did Prabhupada ever say to do that? You know, they're not doing this and they're not dressing their dhotis like that. But he's using his intelligence to spread Krishna consciousness. And even recently I was speaking to another godbrother who wants to do something even more radical. Because the loft program is like a bridge program. You understand? Bridge program? Where ultimately, you know, what is it? In like a pin, out like a plow program. That, you know, they come to the yoga studio and they stand on their head for a few minutes. And you play some Hare Krishna music. And you give them some prasadam, and the next thing they know, they have a bald head. So that's what a bridge. they're in the temple playing the cymbals and everything like that. So we have another god brother who wants to build a society, not society, but a program where not precisely bridge, but just a different branch of the Krishna consciousness movement, which is really interesting, where people may not wear dhotis, even after 30 years in the Hare Krishna movement. Now, that may sound really radical. And, you know, I said to this person, I said, what, you burn the bridge before you crossed it? I said, most people, you know, burn the bridge behind them. you put a bomb on it before, you know, like that one movie when I was young, there's Bridge Over the River Kwai. Anyone's ever seen that movie? Where the soldiers burned or bombed the bridge or something like that. So I said, huh? What happened to the bridge? And then he was talking about how in the Catholic Church you have the Jesuits, who are, you know, devout Catholics, but it's a different branch of the Catholic. So ISKCON, in order to expand, I mean, there's a good point there, that ISKCON, in order to expand, will have to have, because expand means we want to take over the world.
You know, we have pretty big ambitions. You know, people knew how ambitious we were. It's not that, you know, we just want to even just have a big temple across the street. I mean, that's nothing. But Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada and Bhakti, Siddhanta Saraswati, and Bhakti Vinod Thakur, they wanted Supreme Court judges wearing tilak. Then they make some better judgments than they are making now. And, you know, the President of the United States wearing tilak, not just having Hanuman in his pocket, but having Hanuman in the Oval Office, a big, you know, a big Hanuman, you know, Radha and Krishna in the Oval. Can you imagine that? That would be interesting. And, you know, at least, and following a few regulative principles and remaining with their wives for a few years. Not like some of the Republican candidates. Now, I know I've mentioned that before. So Prabhupada's vision was quite wide. So really, to carry out the mission, one has to understand the point I'm making. One has to understand that what is the intention and what does he want? Not just to follow ritualistically and go on with the same. I mean, of course, we do have the same programs. I mean, I'm very conservative. You know, I go to the morning program, Bhagavatam class, and all those other things, which is what Prabhupada wanted us to do. But there has to be a place, like, you know, there's that famous quote, you know, Prabhupada built a house big enough for the whole world to live in. So, and of course that quote was made by someone who wasn't a devotee. Did you know that? I mean, it was made by some astrologer or something like that who was a Shakta. So, but Prabhupada liked the quote. That was the point. So we have to be able to accommodate people who, let's say, may be attached to different styles of dress and doing different things in a different way, and vegetarian food. Just like I was talking to a member of another religious society, and they're vegetarians and everything like that. And actually, they're growing quite quickly, and they're very strict too. They don't eat meat, fish, eggs, or onions, or garlic, or chocolate, or anything. I mean, just as strict as we are. And I said, what type of diet? You know, they're Indian-based, too. I said, what type of diet do you prescribe for your followers? And they said, well, we just allow people to have their local diets as long as it's vegetarian. In other words, if we're in Mexico, we'll have enchiladas and different things like that. And if we're in Italy, a lot of pizza. So, I'd like to join that movement, a lot of pizza. Anyway, so I was thinking that you know, in order to attract people, I was just making a point. Maybe we continue with this line of thought. So we have to be able to present things to people in a certain way that not require too much cultural change, with non-essential cultural items. And so that's what I was appreciating with my godbrother was suggesting, that, you know, we be open enough, but strict enough. You know, we chant Hare Krishna, follow the four regulated principles, that Prabhupada, read Bhagavatam, and all those other things. But anyway, there's more of the discussion.